Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, Books on Color with us, Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library. Hi, Jill.
Good morning, Mindy.
And Laura Reckford, executive director of the Falmouth Arts Center. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Mindy.
So I'm really interested, Jill, I think this was your idea, and I'm really interested. Books on Color, we've got a really broad brush here.
Yeah, quite literally a broad brush for colors. And I was astonished, as I often am, at how many, I come up with some idea for the show, and then I'm like, oh, my God, there are like hundreds of possible choices here. And how do you, winnow it down to just a few? Because when you start talking about colors, picture books alone, we could do, I don't know, six shows on picture books having to do with colors, but you've got birds, and you've got gardens, and you've got wallpaper, and this is not even including whatever art that we might be discussing. So it is a very rich, as in rich colors, topic. I think it lends itself to many different directions.
Exactly. And I want to remind listeners that I don't know what books, and we all don't know. Laura doesn't know what books you have, and you don't know what books Laura have. That's sort of the beauty of this show that we do once a month, is we just kind of put it all on the table, although not literally right now. Usually it is literally we put the books on the table. And it's so much fun to sort of see what we come up with. And then, of course, listeners can chime in with their thoughts to add to our book list of books on colors. So, Jill, what are you starting us off with?
Well, I also just want to say welcome, Laura, who I have not done the book show with before, and I'm delighted that you're here, and I wish we were in the studio so I could see you in person. But
thank you. I'm so glad you folks thought of including me, and this was definitely a little bit of a puzzle. I went to my bookshelves and started pulling out books that had colors in the title. And a friend of mine said, why don't you just go to Google? And I said, but this is not my favorite books. I want it to be books I really love. So I really went through all my books, but this was a fun exercise. So thank you for including me.
Well, really delighted that you're here. And I am going to start with some picture books, because I was totally blown away with how many picture books there are about color. I guess, not having children myself, apparently it's a very big thing to teach kids colors, and therefore there are trillions of that. Trillions may be an exaggeration, but not much of an exaggeration. In fact, there are children's librarians often do these little book bundles with picture books that have themes, and I noticed they have done a lot of picture book themes on colors. And the book that I'm starting with is a book actually that was on my shelf, and I'll be darned if I know when exactly I got this. I suspect that I was in a cousin's, because I can see that it has an A Cousins sticker on it, and I saw it and I was like, oh, I have to have that book, and thus it ended up in my house. And it is called Pantone Colors, and Pantone is the sort of the color maker that decides what's going to be the cool color that you're going to paint your walls with. Every year they come up with a new list of colors. This particular book is basically it's an illustration, beautiful illustrations of something that is a particular color. And so on one side of the page, you have this illustration, and on the other side, you have all the various possible shades. And what's one of the most fun things about Pantone colors are the names they give them. So, for example, in this first page, we have yellow, and there is a picture of a lion, an illustration of a lion. But I think kids will have as much fun with the names of the colors as with the illustrations. So, for example, you have raincoat yellow, daffodil yellow, lemon yellow, dandelion yellow, taxicab yellow, school bus yellow, corn yellow, squash yellow, mustard yellow. I mean, it goes on and on. But it's actually a really beautiful book, and sort of indestructible. It is, so that's also good. I think you could chew on this book easily, and it would not hurt it too much. It's basically just helping you learn your colors. And with, again, beautiful illustrations, very fun, very lively, and I think would be really fun for anybody, including kids. And another picture book that I found is called The Blue Hour by Isabel Simler. And this is, of course, all about blue. And it starts out with these gorgeous end papers. I have to say, one of the great things about all these color books, picture books particularly, lots and lots of great colors. And so at the beginning, they too, she lays out all the different kinds of blues. So there's ocean blue and sky blue and storm blue and duck blue, and it goes on and on. But the Blue Hour is about, begins saying the day ends, the night falls, and in between, there's the blue hour. And then it just goes through all, it's got gorgeous, gorgeous illustrations, and it goes through all the things that various animals are doing in the middle of the night. A really gorgeous book, The Blue Hour by Isabel Simler. And one last blue book is by Laura Vaquero Seeger. She also did one of these that was green, and this is basically telling the story. There is a story involved, and it's really about a kid growing up, because it begins with baby blue, and it goes through all these various blues, but as it goes through the blue, it's also the story of a dog, and that begins as a puppy and does not make it through the end of the book. So there's beautiful illustrations of the dog, and it also takes place by the ocean, so you have some beautiful ocean pictures as well. So you've got another story about blue by Laura Vaquero Seeger. So those are just three of, may I say, hundreds of possibilities of picture books for kids and color.
Well, it's funny, that first book where you were talking about knowing your colors, and I'm thinking of paint colors, and it's interesting, gray, G-R-A-Y, and gray, G-R-E-Y, are very different colors. My niece's husband was saying he had this, what it was, something gray that he really loved, and he went to the paint store to get it, and they did the opposite gray, and it turned out to be some purple, which is not what he was looking for. So knowing your colors and how to spell them is important,
it's really important. Well, and I will say, having just bought a house a year ago, I think I was also thinking about painting the walls, which may be another reason I ended up with this Pantone Colors picture book.
Yeah, I think it would be really fun to be the people who name paint colors.
Oh, yes, yes. What a fun job.
Yeah, go ahead, Laura.
I'll throw out two kids' books, and I do love kids' books, and of course, most of them are all about color, and they're so colorful. And one of my favorite children's book authors is Mara Kalman, and she has a book called Colors, and I just think she's sort of my go-to children's book author, where her books are so fun and a lot of humor in them, and that is one of the books she did. And the other one, another favorite book that, of course, is one that everyone will know, is Green Eggs and Ham.
Yes,
so, of course.
I have to throw out Dr. Seuss as also a brilliant colorist, and just obviously all of his books are so fun for children.
Yeah. We've already got an email. Richard says he's suggesting a classic, On Being Blue, A Philosophical Inquiry by William Gass. This is an older book, 1976. And he adds, Gass writes, of the colors, blue and green have the greatest emotional range. Sad reds and melancholy yellows are difficult to turn up. Among the ancient elements, blue occurs everywhere in ice and water, and the flame is purely as in the flower overhead and inside caves, covering fruit and oozing out of clay. Although green enlivens the earth and mixes in the ocean, and we find it copperish in fire, green air, green skies are rare. Gray and brown are widely distributed, but there are no joyful swatches of either, or any of exuberant black, sullen pink, or acquiescent orange. Blue is therefore most suitable as the color of interior life, whether slick, light, sharp, high, bright, thick, quick, sour, new, and cool, or low, deep, sweet, dark, soft, slow, smooth, heavy, old, and warm. Blue moves easily among them all, and all profound qualify our states of feeling. Thank you, Richard, for that. If you'd like to suggest something for us, 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jill.
Well, I just want to say that was, he was, if you still have it up there, that was William Gass's On Being Blue, correct?
Yes.
Yes. which I also had in my pile. And I just want to say a word about that book, because I almost didn't bring it because there is a lot of language in there that might upset some people, but it is also a classic, and it is a spectacularly wonderful meditation on being blue. And it has was first published in 1976, but it actually not so long ago got reissued as a classic. And so I too highly recommend it. And it is just this wonderful. If you like books that have lists in them, this is a great book that has the right at the very beginning: blue pencils, blue noses, blue movies, laws, blue legs and stockings, and language of birds, bees, flowers. It goes on and on. And he is right to say it is a classic. It is a beautiful book on being blue by William Gass. And I also Laura mentioned Myra Kalman, who is also I'm also a very big fan of Myra Kalman. And I had brought Sarah Berman's Closet, which is a book, as it says on the cover, this is a book about Sarah and her journey to America and eating lemon ices and the meaning of time. And it's by Myra Kalman and her son, Alex Kalman. And it has a whole section. She has great illustrations, but there is the middle section of the book is about her mother's decision to only wear white. She writes, one Friday morning, in a burst of personal expression, she decided to wear only white. And the book is about this decision. It's also about her memoir of her mother. And this her closet, which was everything in it was white, ended up being an art exhibit at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. So this book, I think, came out of the art exhibit. So it's a really interesting idea to just dress in one color. And I think this book, again, has great illustrations, but also is a sort of tribute to her mother and to her son as well. And I think that you might really enjoy looking at it. And Laura, if you haven't seen this, I'm sure you will enjoy looking at it.
I have to have that book.
You do. You really
on my list.
Yeah. Jill, tell us the name, the title and author again.
Sure. It is called Sarah Berman's Closet, and it's by Myra and Alex Kalman.
All right. Laura, what have you got next in your list?
Well, since we were on the color blue there for a moment, pull out, and it's going to be interesting to see which books we have in common, Jill and I here. But what I have is Blue Dog and it's the paintings of George Rodrigue, who is a Louisiana artist, and his paintings of his dog are all of a blue dog, and he got very famous with these paintings, and he put together this book. It's a gorgeous art book of the paintings, and I'll read a little bit about it. What can this inspirational tale about a dog, her master, and his paintings tell us about love, art, and human nature? And it says, George Rodrigue's colorful and intriguing paintings dramatized Tiffany, that's the dog's transformation, from a frisky black and white terrier spaniel to blue dog, illustrating the points and counterpoints encountered by both man and beast in their poignant search for deeper communication. So you have a lot of themes here. You have for dog lovers, it's a great story about a man and his dog and these beautiful illustrations. And it's really, it's an art book that came out in 1994, so it's a gorgeous book, actually, from Viking Books put this out. So I think it might still be in print, and it is really a gorgeous book. The color blue and paintings and art and a story about life, really.
All right, let's talk to Donna, who's giving us a call from Woods Hole. Hi, Donna.
Hi, how are you doing? Good morning. This
Good.
Is a great topic. I have a book. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
I have a great book that I found called Color Energy. It's by Tony and Tina, and it's how color can transform your life. And it's all about the spiritual energy of color and in finding the colors that you're naturally drawn to, or maybe colors that would help to heal you emotionally or physically. Talks about the chakras, the color of love, the color of success, color medicine, rooms to breathe in, the colors we wear, and even makeup that can help to transform your life. And, you know, I'm also a musician, and sound is vibrations, and colors are vibrations. So it's a different way of looking at colors.
Great. Color Energy by Tony and Tina. Thank you so much for that suggestion. We'll put that on our list. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books on colors this morning with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Laura Reckford, executive director of the Falmouth Arts Center. 866-999-4626 if you'd like to suggest a book for our list this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jill, what have you got next?
What I've got next is a few, not exactly poems, sort of meditations on different colors. This is a terrific book called My Private Property by Mary Ruffel. Mary Ruffel is a poet and essayist who lives in Vermont and whose stuff I like reading a lot. And I'd forgotten, in fact, that she had done these, she has done little bits of, I don't even know exactly what to call them. They're sort of poems, they're sort of essays, but they're really short. She has chosen 11 different colors for different kinds of sadness. And I just thought the whole idea of color and sadness was a really good one. But here's a little bit, here are a couple of them. This is about purple sadness. Purple sadness is the sadness of classical music and eggplant, the stroke of midnight, human organs, ports cut off for part of every year, words with too many meanings, incense, insomnia, and the crescent moon. It is the sadness of play money and iceberg seen from a canoe. It is possible to dance to purple sadness, though slowly as it takes to dig a pit to hold a sleeping giant. Purple sadness is pervasive and goes deeper into the interior than the world's greatest nickel deposits or any other sadness on earth. It is the sadness of depositories and heels echoing down a long corridor. It is the sound of your mother closing the door at night, leaving you alone. So that's the purple one. And here is a gray one, which I think is also fabulous. Gray sadness is the sadness of paper clips and rubber bands, of rain and squirrels and chewing gum, ointments and unguents and movie theaters. Gray sadness is the most common of all sadnesses. It is the sadness of sand in the desert and sand on the beach, the sadness of keys in a pocket, cans on a shelf, hair in a comb, dry cleaning, and raisins. Gray sadness is beautiful, but not to be confused with the beauty of blue sadness, which is irreplaceable. Sad to say, gray sadness is replaceable. It can be replaced daily. It is the sadness of a melting snowman in a snowstorm. And then one last one, which is very short, which is about brown sadness. Brown sadness is the simple sadness. It is the sadness of huge upright stones. That is all. It is simple. Huge upright stones surround the other sadnesses and protect them. A circle of huge upright stones. Who would have thought it? So she has a sense of humor about the sadness of color. And again, there are 11 different colors in her list of sadnesses. I think every one of them is a beautiful little piece of writing. And I think a lot of people are sort of carrying a lot of sadness right now. So it's nice to bring some color to the sadness.
I was no happy colors.
No, well, this particularly is all about the sadness of colors.
Okay.
There are plenty of happy colors, but in fact, My Private Property by Mary Ruffel includes only particularly the sadness of colors.
Okay, gotcha. All right, Laura, what have you got next?
Well, I've got two poetry things, and it does go in a different direction than those, so good time to bring them out. So I have The Wild Party by Joseph Moncure March. And this was a lost classic. It's a jazz age poem from the 20s, and Pantheon Books put out a beautiful edition of it around 1994. It's got drawings by Art Spiegelman. And there are basically, it's a very colorful poem. The little book is about 90 pages. And little stanzas on each page. But it's a long poem about basically a wild night in the 20s, and there are just colors on every page. I would just thought of this immediately when I thought about books and poems about colors. And so I'll just read the first page of The Wild Party. Queenie was a blonde, and her age stood still, and she danced twice a day in vaudeville. Gray eyes, lips like coals aglow, her face was a twisted mask of snow. What hips, what shoulders, what a back she had. Her legs were built to drive men mad, and she did. She would skid, but sooner or later they bored her. 16 a year was her order. So that's the first stanza of The Wild Party, the lost classic by Joseph Moncure March, and it's a terrific book. You won't forget it once you read it, I'll tell you that.
All right, 866-999-4626 if you have some suggestions for books on color. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jill.
Okay, well, from that book, we're going to a book called Women in Clothes, which was put together by Sheila Hetty, Heidi Julewicz, Leanne Chapton, and 639 others. And I do think that one of the reasons I wanted to do color was because of this book. I really love this book, but I haven't figured out a way to work it into any radio show until today, because, in fact, not surprisingly, given that it's called Women in Clothes, it involves a lot of color. And one of the great things about this book as well is that you can dive in and leave and dive in, because it has so many different moving parts in the book. It began as a survey consisting of an ever-evolving list of questions that the editor sent out to more than 600 women. And here's a small sample of some of the questions they were asking. Do you think you have taste or style? Can you say a bit about how your mother's body and style has been passed down to you? Are there any dressing rules you'd want to convey? To other women, do you ever wish you were a man or could dress like a man or had a man's body? So there was this whole series of questions, and they got a whole series of responses. And not surprisingly, color did come into the conversation from time to time. And a lot of these, there are both very well-known women that are answering their surveys and women that you would not know at all. It's, as one reviewer said, it's part advice manual, part anthropological study, and part feminist document, which seems about right. But here's a little bit about what one woman said about red. They were asking people about color. And Amy Rose Spiegel wrote, I think it's important to have one red detail, a purse, a hair bow, shoes. I think of it like a red door on an otherwise plain house, and how elegant that always seems, which I know is a great way to describe red, wearing red. There also is a section on, here's somebody, this is about called, the overall section is called Color Taxonomy by Tavi Gevinson, and here's a little bit about what she says about white. Although white is thought to be immovably holy for its role in weddings, it has been ostracized as an everyday color for its reputation as unflattering. In doing this, however, we forget what white does better than any other color. Lace, the sleekest kinds of leather, pristine Seinfeld sneakers. If one must avoid wearing white on one's body despite the potential to feel like an ice queen, I strongly advise exploring it when it comes to accessories and embellishments. If you're a clumsy eater, remember Vivian Westwood, quote, stains are decorations, end quote. If you just detest the association with purity, dig up a few Kinder whore references. So there's that. And she also writes about pink, and actually pink is sort of funny. Pink is not a real color. It is not on the spectrum of light and was not visible in the world until UV rays, radio waves, gamma rays, and other signifiers of the planet's eventual demise came into existence. But despite this troubling history, pink is thought to be the most non-threatening color, which may explain its assignment to the female gender. It's frilly and inconsequential and best known for its appearance appearances on princesses' dolls and blushing faces. And she goes on from there. But one of the other really interesting bits in this book that I found, which I read only, which has not so much to do with color, but has to do with the ocean, but given where we are, I wanted to just read a little bit about what she says about the ocean, because she writes, and this is actually, this is somebody else that it's not, this is Heidi Julewicz that wrote a section in here called Summer Diary, and she writes, I felt the ocean like a garment. I started to think of different outfits I could wear that could approximate the garment feel of the ocean when in 2 weeks I'm no longer able to swim in it because we're going back to the city. And she says, people design clothing that makes you imagine you might be the sort of person to lie in a beach of hot rocks, but they don't design clothing that makes you feel like you're lying on a beach or swimming in salt water. Why not? Why doesn't clothing take greater advantage of the fact that it touches your body? When I'm in the city, I don't want to pretend through my clothing that I'm walking by the sea. I want to believe I'm swimming in it. So a little ocean, a little ocean clothing, along with the color clothing in Women in Clothes, a really fascinating book. It is quite a large book, and all comes from a survey. It's also very heavily illustrated with watches and jewelry and clothing. So I would recommend you take a look at Women in Clothes. Sheila Heidi. Heidi Julewicz, Leanne Chapin, and 639 others.
All right. Let's talk to Judy, who's giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Judy.
Hello. Good to be on the air. And you've picked a subject very close to my heart. So I have a book to recommend called The Secret Lives of Color. And this book is an example for me of the value of browsing in a store, such as Eight Cousins, instead of ordering online, because I didn't go in intending to buy this book. The Secret Lives of Colors, and the author is Cassia St. Clair. And I just want to read one sentence from the back cover. It tells the unusual stories of 75 fascinating shades, dyes, and hues, from the brown that changed the way battles were fought to the white that protected against the plague, from Picasso's Blue Period to the charcoal on the cave walls of Lascaux, from Scarlet Women to Pink's Industrial Pink. These surprising stories run the bright thread throughout history. And so it's a colorful book, but there's a whole lot of text because it's building the history of colors in. And one clarification I wanted to bring to all of you was about Pantone. Back in the 70s, I worked in advertising, and I was a production manager, so I would have to go to printers to check a print job on press. And Pantone, in effect, is it's been around for decades, is used as a recipe for making sure that color is precise. So it's so many parts of red, so many parts of black, I'm not trying to remember. So it's magenta, cyan, yellow, and black. So you literally get a recipe, and you, Pantone, all those little chips that you see when you go into the paint store, there's a recipe behind each one as to how many parts of those four colors make up the color. So,
great.
Anyway,
Judy, thank you for that.
I love the show so far.
Thank you.
And that is terrific because that's I love that you're taking you take all these different colors to get one color. And I have to say, I also had my pile of books, The Secret Lives of Color, which is a gorgeous book, also available in your public library as well as Eight Cousins. And I think it's just a it's something about it that it's a very perfect size somehow of book. It's really it's not the usual shape of a book in some ways, but it's beautiful and it is beautifully illustrated with all the colors as well as descriptions of colors.
Judy, thanks for that suggestion. And Judy also made another comment that I thought was interesting in that she said going into the bookstore or the library for that matter, you may come across something that you had no intent, that's not what you're looking for, but that's the way we find great books, right? You're browsing
True, and I have to say, I've been spending a lot of my time, well, not a lot of my time, but usually at least an hour a day I'm outside talking to people that are returning or picking up materials just to see how everybody's doing. And the number one thing that people most miss about having the actual building open is browsing, because browsing is so much fun. You never know what you might find. It's as our listener just found The Secret Lives of Color, you don't know what you're looking for when you're browsing. searching, and you can find some real treasures. It's a great thing to be able to do, and I look forward to everybody being able to do it again.
Yeah. All right, Liz, Laura, what have you got next?
I was thinking about classic novels, and so jumping into novels, and just a kind of thought about that, you know, Red Badge of Courage, Scarlet Letter, Study in Scarlet, all these sort of various books that use the color red, and then, of course, one that comes up also would be The Color Purple, that book, and what that that title means to that famous book. And then I asked my my father, who's a college literature professor, just retired from that, and he's 84, and I said, you know, not classic books about color, and he said, well, The Great Gatsby with the color green, mm-hmm. and Daisy Buchanan with the green light. So just kind of thinking about in classic literature, the colors. But in my bookshelf, I brought out a murder mystery called Black and White and Dead All Over, a novel by John Darnton. And this is a terrific murder mystery that I worked at the Enterprise for 15 years, and one of the other editors lent it to me because it's a newsroom mystery, and a terrific novel by John Darnton, and probably available in your local library, if not at Eight Cousins, because it was published a few years ago, 2008. Again, a lot of books and classic literature with colors in the title.
Yeah. Laura, thanks. And we should mention, we mentioned Eight Cousins a couple of times here. We have lots of great independent bookstores across the Cape. And if they don't have it on their shelves, they likely can get it for you. So, you know, feel free to ask your local bookstore if they can get that title for you. Let's talk to Helen, who's calling from Wellfleet. Hi, Helen.
Hi there. I heard from the person who takes your calls initially that you haven't yet discussed the book about color that's right at the center of the whole subject, which is by Victoria Finley. It's called Color. I'm a painter, and painters give this book to each other. And each segment, which is about a different pigment, right, has history and anecdotes. It seems very well researched. And it reads like the best fiction. It's extraordinary. It has, you know, it takes the use, for example, of white through its difficult phase of lead white being very much sought after and who used it. The other book that I'd like to bring up that isn't about color but has a whole section on what the colors of clothes meant during the time around the Civil War in this country, and probably in other countries, is by, Drew Gilpin Faust, or Drew Faust Gilpin. She's a historian. She was also the dean of Harvard for a while and the head of the Radcliffe Institute, which was for women scholars to go and, you know, write books and stuff. And the nuances of what your clothes looked like in terms of color were very, very subtle, very communicative. I'm sorry, I just woke up, so I can't speak English. But to go back to Victoria Finlay's book, of course, I've been reading about color all my life now and using it. And that really is, it's the great classic. I really appreciate listening to what you've been reading from fiction and stuff, and thank you. And now I'm going to get off and have some coffee.
All right, Helen, thank you. Thank you for that. Color, it's a natural history of the
palette.
You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books on color with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Laura Reckford, executive director of the Falmouth Arts Center. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Henry and Jane said some books that they have enjoyed are Blues by John Hershey, The Joy of Fishing for Bluefish, and The Girl with the Pearl Earring, Descriptions of Grind Pigments for Vermeer, A Study in Scarlet by Arthur Conan Doyle for Sherlock Holmes with Dr. Watson. Thanks for those suggestions, and we'll add them to our list. And again, we will have a link to all the books we talk about today up a little bit later today on our website, capeandislands.org. Jill, what have you got next?
Okay, well, I have another novel, and it's a novel I love very much. It's probably the only novel by Jules Verne which really isn't about, is not a science fiction novel. It's called The Green Ray, and the basic premise is when a newspaper article tells Helena Campbell, whose impending arranged marriage is less than a love match, that seeing the green ray is an indication of true love, she refuses to marry anyone until she has seen it. Her quest to view the green ray takes her on an island-hopping tour of the Hebrides that nearly costs her life, and Helena must ask herself, is seeing the green ray worth it? And it starts actually with a newspaper article that she reads that says, begins, "Have you ever watched the sun as it sets over the sea? No doubt the answer is yes. Have you followed it up to the moment when the upper part of its disc grazes the line of the water and it is about to disappear? Very probably." And it goes on to describe what the green ray is, which supposedly you can see if everything is exactly right when the sun goes down over the ocean. And so her uncles, who want her to get married, and so therefore they have to help her find the green ray, see the green ray, start taking her all over the place. And here is a little bit about the green ray. The 23rd August arrived, and the phenomena had not deigned to appear. This whim became an E-day fix that left no room for any other. It turned into an obsession. They dreamed of it night and day until it was to be feared that it was becoming a new type of monomania in an era when they have become countless. In this frame of mind, all colors transformed themselves into one unique color. The blue sky was green, the roads were green, the shore was green, the rocks were green, and the water and the wine were as green as absinthe. The Melville brothers imagined that they were dressed in green and mistook themselves for two large parrots who took green snuff from a green snuff box. In a word, it was a case of green madness. They were all struck by some sort of color blindness, and occultists would have had matter for the publication of interesting notes in their ophthalmology reviews. It could not last much longer. So the whole book is essentially looking for the green ray. I won't tell you if she sees it or not. That would ruin the end of the book. But it is The Green Ray by Jules Verne, and it's a delightful read.
All right, Laura.
Well, we were talking about books that artists might be interested in that have to do with color, so I'm going to bring up a relatively new book. I think it came out in 2018, Ninth Street Women, Lee Krasner, Elaine de Kooning, Grace Hartigan, Joan Mitchell, and Helen Frankenthaler, Five Painters and the Movement That Changed Modern Art. And this is by Mary Gabriel, and, of course, with abstract painting, the color and composition is so key, and so this is a large, very interesting book, and color certainly plays a part in it. And I'll read just a little bit about from the jacket cover. Set amid the most turbulent social and political period of modern times, Ninth Street Women is the impassioned, wild, sometimes tragic, always exhilarating chronicle of five women who dared to enter the male-dominated world of 20th century abstract painting, not as muses, but as artists. From their Coldwater lofts, where they worked, drank, fought, and loved, these pioneers burst open the door to the art world for themselves and countless others to come. So just a really terrific history book about 20th century art, and quite a lot about color in here, as well as the lives of these extraordinary women artists.
Very good. Jill?
Well, I have a book about wallpaper, a really gorgeous book about wallpaper called The Wallpaper Book. And actually, even as I'm saying this, I'm thinking there's also this very famous short story called The Yellow Wallpaper by Charlotte Perkins Gilman, which is all about this woman who's sort of going mad, and her husband takes her out to the country, and the yellow wallpaper sort of does her in this country house that they're staying in. But that's an aside to The Wallpaper Book, which is this glorious book about the history of wallpaper. And when America, apparently the British were way ahead of us, as they were in many things, with wallpaper. But it was a big deal when America started producing its own wallpaper. And there are also, you'll find out, all kinds of colors and patterns that wallpapers come in, and all of the artists that have been involved with creating wallpapers. As it says here, a surprising number of acclaimed artists and designers have created wallpaper designs, including Jean-Baptiste Pillemin, Paul Cézanne, Henri Matisse, Charles Rennie Mackintosh, Joseph Hoffman, Alphonse Mucha, Salvador Dali, René Magritte, Joan Miró, Frank Lloyd Wright. I mean, it goes on and on. Andy Warhol. I mean, and as it says in the book, this fact serves to remind us that links between the arts have always existed, and the great artists have never been afraid of treating wallpaper as a creative medium. Although these experiments were frequently one-offs and often very discreet, some dazzling creations have resulted from them. After delving a little deeper into the history of wallpaper, we would have to be very mean-spirited indeed to regard it as merely a minor decorative art. And there are all kinds of gorgeous illustrations of beautiful, beautiful wallpapers. There's a section on color and pattern, and it begins, wallpaper is an expression of our personalities, a revelation of a particular state of mind. It is like a double that clings to us, close as a shadow, solid and yet ambiguous. Perhaps this ambiguity is what gives it its charm. And there are two things that go into wallpaper. It's, you've got the pattern, but you also have the color. And it also has this whole section on color specifically and how colors were originally made. And the listener who was talking to us about the Pantone colors, this is similar in how they're making colors for wallpaper. It says here, an early wallpaper workshop had the air of an alchemist's den, but the goal of the craftsmen who worked there was not gold, but color. First, printer's inks were mixed with oil. Then distemper colors were created by binding pigments together with glue. From the 18th century onwards, efforts were focused on expanding the color palette and breaking away from the dull grays and browns of the early dominoes. And it goes on to tell the whole history of color in wallpaper. It's a spectacularly beautiful book. It's a large book, an oversized book. It is called The Wallpaper Book by Genevieve Brunet.
Mm. I'd be interested to see that wallpaper by Salvador Dali and Andy Warhol.
Must be fabulous, right?
Exactly. Could have some fun with that. All right, Laura, what have you got next?
Well, I do have something in the interior decorating theme as well. And this one is called Cape Cod Gardens and Houses. And it really, I think of this as almost an idea book of how to look at colors in your house and in your garden and how to put things together that match or highlight each other. And this book, which came out some years ago, I want to say probably around 1994, Simon Schuster, photography by Taylor Lewis and Greg Hadley, text by Catherine Fallon. It's called Cape Cod Gardens and Houses. And they also did a Martha's Vineyard version and a Nantucket version. And they spend a lot of time taking you through a number of different houses and gardens and naming specifically what goes together. And you can see just, gorgeous combinations, particularly in the garden pictures. This is an oversized picture book. Of different plants you can put together and what works well in this region in particular, what grows well outside. And, of course, lots of ideas for both the garden and interior decorating in these books, Cape Cod Gardens and Houses.
All right. We have an email from Louisa who says, my favorite book since childhood, Pitadot the Color Maker by H. Glenn Dines. And she says, Pitadot is an irresponsible apprentice color maker who's left in charge while Wizard Resk travels to get more colors. Pitadot goes wild, mixing everything together and making a huge mess. First, we see purple cows and green cats, etc. Then all color fades away as Pitadot panics. Finally, he runs up a hill and sits down with tears running down his face. The sun shines down through his tear, refracting and bringing back all the colors of the rainbow. Pitadot dashes back to the color cave and remixes all of the colors carefully, cleans the entire cave, and then passes out in the giant color bowl where Resk finds him upon his return. She says, the best book ever. She says limited production. I just quickly took a look online, and you can still get, it's not inexpensive, but I bet I'll check with one of the libraries. There may be a copy of that. That is Pitadot the Color Maker by H. Glenn Dines. Sounds like a fun book. Jill, what have you got?
Well, let's say, that sounds like a great book. Anyway, I did bring, speaking of gardens, The Gardener's Color Palette by Tom Fisher, the subtitle being Paint Your Garden with 100 Extraordinary Flower Choices. It is literally pictures of flowers and the colors that they can be. And the, for example, green, it goes from green to chartreuse, and they write, green, of course, is the universal hue of gardening, but something mysterious happens when it makes the jump from foliage to flower. Maybe it's just the shock of the unexpected, but green flowers unfailingly grab our attention. We may find them odd, exquisite, or hideous, but we cannot ignore them. Now, I don't know how many people have green flowers in their gardens, but actually, they're sort of beautiful in this book. I don't know. And everything is separated by colors, so you start with the reds and then moves on from there. The idea being ways to get you to use color in your garden. As they say at the beginning, forget sunsets, precious stones, and butterflies. Flowers are nature's most direct and accessible route to enjoying the pure pleasures of color. In fact, it's impossible to even think about flowers without thinking about color as well. Say the word sunflower and your mind is flooded with yellow. Talk about gentians and you conjure up blue as its most intense and dazzling. I chose the flowers featured in this book because they embody color with a particular intensity or flair. So if you're looking for color ideas for your, and more and more, I mean, I've heard of white gardens, but I'm sure there are, everybody has their own favorite color. So I'm sure everybody has one color or another where they have more flowers of one particular color. I do remember seeing a spectacular white garden in Sissinghurst, which is where Virginia Woolf used to hang out. And so white gardens are pretty spectacular.
Yeah, they're really nice if you're outside at night. Laura, you got about a minute and a half.
Okay, well, I'll just say another quick one about abstract art. This is a little booklet published by the Provincetown Art Association Museum 20 years ago or so, and it's called Life Colors Art, 50 Years of Painting by Peter Busa. And Chris Busa just passed away within the last month, and he published Provincetown Art Magazine. He was the founder of that. And so I thought this was interesting, a little booklet about his father, who was, again, an abstract expressionist painter in the 50s and 60s and so on, when that mode of painting was just hitting the art world by storm. And again, it's a wonderful, when I think of color and art, I think of abstract art. And at the Art Center, we have an annual abstract art show in the fall. Again, this is a lovely little book all about abstract art and wonderful colors and people might be able to pick up at the Provincetown Art Association and Museum, or request it from any local bookstore or library.
All right. Laura Reckford is the executive director of the Falmouth Art Center, and Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library. Thank you to you both.
Thank you so much.
And again, we will have a link to the books that we talked about this morning a little bit later today at our website, capeandislands.org. I'm Indy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.